Welcome, listeners, to a very special episode of Shadow Talk, Digital Shadow's weekly threat intelligence podcast. Joining me today, I have Rick Holland and Charles Ragland, but absolutely most important, we have Marcus J. Carey joining us today. How's it going, Marcus? Great to have you on the show.
I appreciate y'all for having me. I'm very excited about where this is going to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Likewise. So to kind of get us started, what we like to do with our visitors is start off with a origin story. So Marcus, I know that you have a lot of experience starting off in the U.S. Navy, moving into founding ThreatCare, and then beyond that, being a co-author for Tribe of Hackers and a myriad of other fantastic books. So can you kind of give us an idea of how everything started for you?
Yeah, so my origin story, I was born in my grandmother's house. So deep in the heart of Texas. So not too many people, not too many relics in the United States, at least, like me. So born in my grandmother's house in the country, outhouse, propane tank. So the country is as you can get. So I tell people when I come into a room, you know, thank God, what is it? Thank God I'm a country boy starts playing some John Denver classics.
That's amazing.
So, but basically from there, when I was grew up in poverty, really tough times, but I was pretty smart. So I scored well on the ASVAB test when I was doing a military entrance exam, and they pegged me to go into cryptography, and the Navy cryptologic program is a pretty dope program to get into. So they train you on I got trained on cryptography. Signals intelligence, all kind of awesome stuff, and ended up doing intelligence collection, working for Fort Meade and NSA for about 8.5 years. And it was great. I learned so much. It took me from poverty to really high-tech feel, and I was driven. So wherever I've been super successful, and at Fort Meade, I did some awesome stuff, and I went on after that. I went to work for CSC, Computer Sciences Corporation, for about 8 years as well. Then I worked for Rapid7, and started my own company after that. Did that for 6 years, and now I'm here. So basically, a country boy that got into technology in the military, and I've been super blessed, and now I'm trying to be a blessing to everybody else.
And that's fantastic.
I was looking back, Marcus, I found my last piece of research that I wrote at Forrester. I was looking at January 2016, and this was the V-Threat days, right? So before you guys went ThreatCare. And the thing I said was, Austin-based V-Threat provides a SaaS-based adversary simulation service, which was a space I was pretty hot on at Forrester. And it's kind of cool to see that space evolve over the past 5 years, 6 years, and then you get picked up by a ReliaQuest. So I think it's pretty cool. I was telling Charles and Casey before this, I remember seeing you at Black Hat 1 year in Innovation City. I can't remember what it was called, but you know, one of the smaller little sections where you had where I was always interested in going to, because instead of going to these giant four-story tall booths, right, you go to where the innovation is at and the smaller companies are doing stuff. So I think it's pretty cool to see the progression of your career, ReliaQuest picking you up about a year ago, right? We're coming up on a 1 year anniversary. So yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it was dope. It was funny because one of my competitors was right across the space from me at that Black Hat. Safe Breach was there. it was funny. I was once and Safe Breach was right beside me. Which is cool because I'm actually really cool with their CTO. Sometimes we create these rivalries that don't need to exist, and you know, everybody's in the game trying to win, and sometimes even what you perceive to be rivals can help you out. So it was crazy that them being right there across from space. It was funny.
Well, you need rivals to be a market, right? There is no market of one. So everyone that wants to get in, you know, fights and Twitter battles and stuff with their competitors is just, you know, doing themselves a disservice.
Yeah. Some I had to learn. I come from a definitely, I'm from the hood, so I'm the country boy, but I'm also a hood. I'm like hood country.
Hood country, right?
Yeah, and so and just understanding that, like right now, man, I'm like when it comes to like running that business for 6 years and getting acquired, man, I learned so much about business and people and just life, man. That was like a PhD. It was crazy. It was good. And I learned so much and that humbled me and that it brought me to some, you know, just dealing with people, dealing with investors, raising funds. Man, I seen it all, bro. Like it was crazy. So that helped me mature so much. And right now I'm sharp, man.
Well, it's been good to see that evolution. And I know we'll promote out your Twitter handle and stuff because you got a lot of good takes and you're really big on community stuff, all kinds of communities, getting people into the field and stuff like that. Charles, you had a little anecdote you wanted to mention to Marcus too about one of the books, right?
Yeah, man. You know, Phil Wiley. That was actually so when I first started here, that was pretty much like one of the only classes I'd taken. I came into this field as a spent a decade in healthcare and emergency medical services and started getting burned out and had a kid and kind of was like, I don't know if I want to wrestle drug addicts at 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, every day for the rest of my life. That's a hard career to make, man, when you start having a kid and other responsibilities and stuff and started looking at going into stuff that I found interesting. I ended up actually taking Phil's class and he's been one of those just the biggest mentors for me since I transitioned to this field a few years ago now. And so it was kind of cool to see him kind of get picked up in your book and stuff, man. That was really cool.
He's very wise. I mean, yeah. You know what's crazy about the book? So there's like tons of unintended things that happen from that book. One of the amazing things that happen I meet awesome, cool people. But most of the people in those books are mentors and they help other people out anyway. And so with Phil, absolutely amazed by the stuff he's doing, Pawn School and all that stuff. Shout out to my boy, Phil. Dude helps so much, and he's such a really good dude. And putting people in the books, this is crazy. It helped identify them so other publishers and things and that went after the people that wrote in the books. So out of Tribe of Hackers, there's a whole ecosystem of books and mentors and all that stuff that are coming out and people being discovered, put on different advisory boards, asked to speak at different conferences. And like, it's so dope that everybody came together and made that happen. And that's the biggest thing about the whole Tribe of Hackers thing is that it's going to, and everything I tried to do in there was evergreen. I didn't want to have, you know, something that's, you know, fly by night. Oh, this is hot right now. Let's write about it. Right. In my head, I was like, what's going to be evergreen? What can somebody pick this book up 20 years from now and learn what we were doing at this time? And hopefully it'll still be relevant a long term. So I'm kind of a stoic in that sense.
It's really awesome, man. It's just really awesome seeing like the growth the community's had with a lot of that stuff that you've been a huge part of. And
Phil has a book coming up, by the way.
Yeah, that's man.
Right.
Yeah.
I saw that.
He's been teaching at all these courses. I was talking to him the other day. He's been at all these talks and like I feel like his profile has really blown up. Like he's getting a lot of the spotlight I feel like he deserves for somebody as smart and kind and helpful as he is. So,
and I got a chance to write the foreword to that book. So,
nice.
Oh man,
that's
awesome.
Cool.
That's my guy.
That's really
that's
cool.
That's fantastic.
That's really cool.
Yeah, no, I mean, I had the opportunity to meet Phil, I guess, back in 2015, 2016, whenever I was starting to get into information security. And that was out at Dallas Hackers Association. So some other folks that were in your book, like Wirefall and Tinker Secor, for example, and then got to loop up with Phil and he was able to walk me through a lot of really great starting points on, you know, kind of how to move in to this general sector. But no, I really like that the books that you've authored, specifically Tribe of Hackers, it kind of gives folks an idea of what the specific I guess, portion of information security means? Like, what does it entail? You get to talk to people that do this on a regular basis and they understand the nitty gritty of it. So for example, the Red Team book, I was like, oh, I want to do Red Team so bad. That sounds awesome. Everyone wants to be a penetration tester. But then after we got into the nitty gritty, I was like, that's not for me. So I definitely think it could aid into folks that are wanting to grow that are in information security or folks that are wanting to get their foot in the door.
Yeah, that's exactly what the whole point was, because, you know, when I go to a conference, a big conference, I can walk up to Rick Holland, who's a superstar. He has a ridiculous shoe game, I have to admit. I was like, hey. Shoe game is on
point. I do have probably like 20 pairs of Converse. But, you know, I would always buy new shoes right ahead of a conference. And now that we're not traveling, I'm like, man, I got to get shoes just to get shoes now.
Boy, Rick, I got something for you. Next time you see me, my kick game is ridiculous now. So
I'm staring at my dirty old boots now, just feeling ashamed.
I may have to come down to Austin and do a social distance shoe game barbecue lunch with you.
Yeah, we definitely need to get our barbecue, and we've been exchanging notes for years. So it'd be great to sit down and break a brisket with you.
Great brisket.
All right, man. Quick question. All right, kind of on that food topic. So I lived in Austin like 7 years, all over the city. Favorite place I lived was South Austin, over off like William Cannon and Brody. I used to go hit up South Congress a lot for some good people watching and stuff, man. I mean, the city's changed so much. I went back for like the first time back in like March, since like 2015, and there's all these new sky rises and stuff. What are some of the good spots to eat at now, man? Anything you recommend? Anything?
Yeah, the spot is Terry Black's Barbecue. The beef rib. Oh my goodness, the beef rib is
my jam, man. I love beef ribs. They're so rich.
Yeah, I mean. That's the spot. So the sides are ridiculous. So that's the spot in Austin for me. You don't have to wait in line forever to get it, and you can sit down. And their beef ribs are ridiculous. I feel like Fred Flintstone with a brontosaurus.
Oh man,
on the side of the car.
You know, they opened up here in Deep Ellum. So they have a spot here that opened up maybe a year ago, or coming up on a year. It's probably a tough time to be opening a business. But I think a lot of the barbecue spots have done, in Texas at least, have done well throughout the pandemic, got creative. It's actually, in some cases, made it easier to get barbecue instead of waiting 2 hours. You know, the only thing I wait in line for is like, it's not concerts. It's not, you know, any of that stuff. I'll wait in line for barbecue. But now it's been a little bit easier with remote ordering and stuff like that to get the barbecue earlier before it all sells out and you miss out on all the good stuff.
Yep. So, yeah. So, other than that, Rudy's been a staple for a while.
Rudy's, man.
That's all over Texas, though. So,
yeah.
I had some brisket up there in north of Dallas somewhere. There's a spot up there. I can't remember the name of it. I'm sorry I even brought it up because I can't remember it. But when I remember what spot that was, there's a spot up there that was ridiculous.
Lockhart's? Lockhart's, maybe?
I think that's what it was. Heart 8?
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
That joker is ridiculous. And the size was crazy up there. I mean, like, wow, that is really good.
So one thing that I will go up there for is their blackberry cobbler. That's, if I'm feeling lazy and I don't want to bake it, I will get their blackberry cobbler. No,
their cobbler is good. Their cobbler is real good. They also do a good sirloin steak. That's good there. What I'm working
on, all the
on,
onions and butter. Yeah.
What I'm working on now, Marcus, for the first time, because we had Chris Sanders on. I don't know if you know Chris, but we had him on last week.
Well, yeah. Yep.
Chris is kind of interesting dude. He's got a very rural country background. In fact, his origin story cracked us up. His origin story was he learned about technology because his cousin built a meth lab and went to jail. And that was his origin story, how he got into technology. But, Chris and I were talking like my new thing for I want to do pastrami. I've never done pastrami and I want to do brisket pastrami, but I'm going to start with tri-tip because it's a smaller cut. Won't cost me as much as a full brisket would if I mess it up. Like $90-$100 experiment. I don't want to do that. But yeah, I'll put pictures up whenever I do this pastrami. Well, whenever I do successful pastrami, I will put that up online.
Yeah, you know, one of the things my wife actually my first duty station was in Scotland, and it's kind of a funny story because
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I went to Pensacola for crypto training. You know, they taught me how to be a crypto dude. I went home, and I was like, "Yeah, I'm going to Scotland." And one of my friends' mom is like, "Man, you gonna go over there and marry one of those white girls?" I was like, "Man, I ain't marrying no white girl. You crazy?" Came back married to a white girl. So it's the funniest thing ever. So my wife is from the UK, and they make a lot of stuff with beef. And so what I do is when I make the brisket, I'll have whatever beef concoctions with brisket. And so with a little smoky taste, it's like a weird Texan versus in Scotland mix of things like that.
Fusion.
Yeah, so this is called Stovies. It's a popular beef, onions, some broth, and it's a really good thing. Stovies, and you eat it with oat cakes is what they call it, and it's a traditional meal. So that's one of the things we make. But yeah, so it's amazing. Well, and it's a spot in Austin that has an Asian and brisket fusion.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've never been to it, but they have like they get Aaron Franklin's brisket up there. Isn't it ramen? Is it a ramen brisket fusion or something like that?
Yeah, it's a Japanese and so it could be anything Japanese related, but it's smoked meats. So yeah. Oh, so I got the master class, and I'm gonna check out that master class from Aaron Franklin. He has a master class on
the
subscription. Nice.
I'm doing a partner event where they've got Aaron, like one of the channel, you know, because all the channel VARs and resellers are trying to get creative, you know, all of us, you know, everyone's trying to get creative with digital events and stuff like that. So Set Solutions, which is a Texas-based reseller, is got an event coming up where they're doing a steak dinner with Aaron Franklin. So like 1 hour, because you couldn't do a brisket class with him in like a 1 hour, obviously, because brisket's a, you know, 3/4 of a day type of proposition. But I'm looking forward to that because I've never seen him speak. I got his book. In fact, I probably have it on one of my shelves. Yeah, I've got it right there, right behind me. I got Aaron Franklin next to Meathead and Project Smoke. That's what I need to do to update my background game, like Marcus's. I need to have it like all meat barbecue related type of stuff.
Yeah. So one of the reasons why I have this up here is I kind of view myself as the Professor Xavier of cybersecurity.
Because I got a lot of
youngsters that come to me and I help them find their superpowers, and I help them refine their superpowers.
That's great. That's great.
And so
that's awesome.
That's part of my little story. That's why I have all this stuff here.
I think that's.
But I tell them you can only use your superpowers for good. We don't need no Magnetos out here.
I like it.
Man, it's definitely awesome. I think it's like I said, somebody myself has come from such a huge career change coming into this. Like just. With the vast number of specialties you can get into, like having somebody with a ton of experience being able to kind of help you see what you're doing and see what options are there, man, is huge, and it's so beneficial. So
yeah, 100%. I think that's the thing. I also help a lot of military people transitioning out, because sometimes military members have a hard time equating what they did in the military to civilian roles. And I think it's the same with many different career fields. You're doing something that could be applied to a cybersecurity discipline. I mean, heck, you can do marketing. There's like a ton of stuff that you could do that you just don't take advantage of in some cases. Like there's sales. If you're quite technical, maybe you could be a technical salesperson. So there's all these different skills. Because what happens is you shouldn't have to start off at ground zero. So you could be making a good salary, like 80, 90, 100K in some other field. And like, man, I want to go to cybersecurity, but your family can't take that L. You feel me? So what you have to do is you have to work with somebody to come into you and make a more of a smoother transition over. Right. And that's what I try to help people do. Like, what are you doing already? What do you enjoy? And what are you doing could be something in your hobby time as well, right? And then how do you make that transition over without having to break the bank for your family? Because a lot of people, you know, if you might have kids, you might have a spouse that you have to support. You never know what people are going through. But I try to help people find what they're really good at, what they're passionate about. And it's just like if you were an NBA player, NBA players, some of them say, I don't have to work because I just play basketball all day, right? And so I want to help people in the hacking and in protection mode. Do you really like it? Okay, cool. And then find the perfect role for them.
One question. How do you, for people that aren't as involved in mentoring and developing the communities and things like that, or maybe don't even know the routes to do it, social media is kind of one that stands out to me, but what recommendations do you have for our listeners now that are like, you know, hearing you talk, hearing your story, inspired by it, and want to start doing the same thing that you've done, you know, throughout, you know, your career, trying to bring stuff to the community? What recommendations would you have for folks?
Basically, you can always start helping the people closest to you, right? Sometimes we will search the other ends of the earth to help somebody. What I recommend is I recommend people look locally first before you try to do, you know, save the world, right? So locally could mean your coworker. Are you helping your coworker, right? Are you helping some person that may be an admin somewhere? And I mean, administrative assistant, do they want to get into cybersecurity? Is there any way you can help them? So we sometimes are looking to social media, for instance, like to help people out. And like I said, I see some churches sometimes, there's churches that have a community of struggling people around them, but they're not helping those people out. So I encourage everybody, it doesn't have to be on social media. It doesn't have to be loud. And the reason why I broadcast what I help people out, you don't see everything, believe me, but I'm vocal about helping out because I want other people to know that they can help out too. And to be honest with you, I've seen a different cybersecurity community personally, and me, it's just not me by myself, but if we're more loud and vocal about helping people out, and I think I am a part of that, more vocal, then more people want to help more people out. But you don't have to go on Twitter. There's somebody in need in your community. And there's somebody that wants to get into cybersecurity that you probably already work with. You know what I'm saying? If you want people complain about developers not knowing how to code, I mean, not knowing security, why don't you sit down with a developer at your shop? You know what I'm saying? Why don't you sit down with system administrators? So one of the things that I've always done is I'm super technical, but I always tell people, I don't know if people think I'm technical or not. I don't know what people's perception is, but I'm kind of a badass when it comes to tech. So I did system administration, network administration, coding, boom, boom, boom. I've done all this stuff, right? And it's, I go like, people don't know. Steve Martin was born in my hometown. Steve Martin, I'm from Waco, Texas. And Steve Martin's from Waco. And Steve Martin has this saying, be so good that they can't ignore you. Because he was a corny, his style of comedy was totally corny. And he's still a corny dude. But
I'm thinking about The Jerk. I remember watching that movie with my dad when I was growing up.
And... How awkward. Think about how awkward Steve Martin is. I'm the black Steve Martin. So what
I love this.
You have such great sound bites, Marcus. This is awesome.
So that's what I was. I'm a weird dude, but what I do is when I would do a vulnerability scan on something and say, "Oh, your Solaris, you need to update this thing on your Solaris thing." I was a Solaris admin, so I can go over there and help that person out and understand what I'm talking about. You don't have to be at an admin level, but you can learn. If this is a patch that you're seeing consistently, you should learn how to do that and be able to help that person out. So you can mentor a lot of people. And sometimes this is what's funny. Sometimes you're helping people and you don't even know it. There's people that come up to me, bro, I've been to conferences and I've had like this Italian FBI dude is like, hey, this tool you wrote years ago, I used it to catch somebody had taken somebody hostage, and they used the tool I wrote to rescue a person. I'm like, what are you talking about? That's crazy. And I wrote a Metasploit keylogger, and somebody was like, yeah, I hacked into the Air Force website or something like that, and I put that keylogger in there, and I showed them the vulnerability. I'm like, what? So what help where you can, and even if you help in small instances, you don't know the global scale of what's going to happen. You know what I'm saying? And that's what I'm saying. Just keep on helping, and there's going to – is when you're helping people, and this is what I tell people, if you're living your life right, you're going to help more people on accident than you help on purpose. And so that's all I got to say about that.
I like that, man. I think that's awesome. I think too, you bring up a good point, just being able to communicate, you know, and kind of pivoting from that, like the book you wrote most recently, the Three Little Hackers. So I picked that up for my kids. I got two daughters. They're a little young for it still, but I think as they come of age, it's something that's going to be important to talk about. But I think even that, like, is just showing again, like, being able to take some of these high level concepts and break them down even to a way that a kid can understand them, you know, I think is key. Because if you can do that, then you can explain it to somebody in Rick's position or in Casey's position or in my position, you know. And so kind of just learning how to communicate like that is huge, I think, in this industry, because that's a thing that a lot of people struggle with. So,
yeah, man, thanks for bringing up my kids' book. So during the beginning of the pandemic, I could draw when I was growing up, so I got a little bit of artistic talent. So I wrote two kids' books at the beginning of the pandemic. One of them was called Think in Code. And it was like teaching your kids the mindset of code. And the other one was Three Little Hackers, where I retold the Three Little Pigs story. And it was three cybersecurity and privacy implications. And the wolf was the villain. So I'm really pumped about that book because, as Charles mentioned, it breaks it down to your kids. And I had so many people reach out to me. It's like, wow, I want to have this conversation with my kid, and this is a great conversation starter. So any piece of art is a conversation starter. It's an icebreaker per se. So I wanted people to have a way to icebreak complicated subject matter to their kids. And I think it's a blessing. I'm a good teacher, and I've always been taught that. I've taught a lot. And I just like breaking stuff down. I think it's the country boy in me, right? If you're from the country, you have to be plain spoken, and we have the most daft sayings that are spot on, right? So I embrace my inner country boy, and I break stuff down, and it's actually funny sometimes. I'm like, man, this is actually funny, but this is actually the way things work. Somebody said something, and it's kind of disgusting, but this is my analogy. on Twitter, somebody says, how could you explain, cryptographic hash algorithm like MD5 collisions to somebody without talking about math, right? I told them, it's like if you ate a cake and you vomited the cake up. It's still a cake, but it doesn't look anything like the cake.
That's great. I love that.
That's what it is. It's still
the yeah.
same thing, but it don't look the same. So anytime you have a cryptographic hash collision, it's not going to be the same original document, but it has the same, you know, same hash.
Yeah.
I'm going to remember that one.
Yeah. I think that's great. Yeah. And I'm not all too familiar with Rick's origin, but I think Charles and I can relate to you on the country kid space, both from pretty small towns. But, you know, like we said earlier, we had Chris Sanders in one of our last podcasts, and he actually started up the Rural Tech Fund. So being able to, you know, get that technology in the kids' hands out in rural areas that don't really have that you know, capability at, you know, their schools or wherever they might be. So just, you know, like you were saying earlier, being able to help local. So like what Phil did, he set up Pwn School in Denton and Dallas, and then that just kind of radiated out. So I really like where you're going with that perspective.
Yeah, 100%. And what's crazy is that I have the Honeypot book. I just got, he just sent me the two copies of the Honeypot book. He gave me one copy for myself and one to give to somebody else. So shout out to Chris. He's an awesome dude. When I sent him 50 Tribal Hackers books. I donated 50 Tribal Hackers book to the Rural Tech Fund as well.
Oh, that's so cool. I didn't realize that.
You know, so what's crazy though, I mean, he doesn't follow me on Twitter either. It's funny because I'm a bit much on Twitter. So, and I get it. You know what I'm saying? I'm very opinionated and very verbosity on Twitter.
That's an understatement.
But behind the scenes though, there's people out there that are helping people out all the time. And that's the people that I want to help and support. Right. And it's so many people out here that's doing it now. I mean, I feel so happy because people are doing the right thing and being a blessing to everybody.
Well, one of the areas where I'd like your help, and the article that you wrote that kind of got me to DM you and see if you want to come on, was the supporting black employees in tech. And you know, you got three white people on this with you. And I think back even to I helped run the San CTI summit. And I remember 3 years ago, we had the picture of the speakers and the advisory board. And I remember telling Ryan Kovar, who's been on the podcast Splunk Dude before, and Ryan was there. I'm like, dude, this is a bunch of 30, 40 something bald looking people. And so we made a very strong effort to try to increase the diversity of there. But I don't see us taking advantage of it to the fullest. You brought up some stuff in that article that I had not considered. And I think it's something that requires some active focus from, you know, executive teams of companies and stuff like that to try to get people that may not have the same opportunities. So I don't know, maybe give a summary of the article, because a lot of people won't see it. We'll put it in the show notes and then we'll just dig into a little conversation on it.
Yeah, certainly. This is something that I struggle with at running my company, by the way. This is something that growing up in technology myself. So growing up in poverty, growing up mostly around black people, right? When I went to the military, it changed my life. And I was lucky that I scored high on the ASVAB test, which actually propelled me into cryptography. So I'm working at NSA and all that stuff, by the way, and there's not a lot of black people that work there. So you tend to hire people that look like you because that's the only people that are around you anyway. So my peers, even though I'm black, all my peers are white. When I start working in the civilian sector, they were either white or Asian, right? Men, right? Not a lot of women, right? And so if I'm going to hire somebody, if you know how they have company employee referral systems, right? You're going to refer people you know. They're good people, but that's all the people that you know and all the people you worked around with. So even in tech, as a black person, and I see black entrepreneurs, their whole team's white, you know? So this is it's a perpetual thing because we just have to be intentional about allowing more people in. So my article was talking about a lot of stuff. Even like since I've been like a senior, I'm a technical dude. I told a story about me even being technical. I wish there wasn't a race related thing though, by the way, Rick. This is what blows my mind. I believe there's one race. There's just a human race, right? I don't think we're any different. And my hubris, if anything, sometimes I think I'm better than everybody. I think I'm smart as a mug. I think I can conquer the world and all that stuff. But I'm humble enough to know that I'm blessed with whatever skills I have. I don't have all the skills in the world. Like, I'm not the best orator. I'm overweight. You know, I'm probably ugly to a lot of people. So but the deal is I'm privileged, right? And I mean, everybody in this podcast, y'all working at this company, y'all getting paid for this podcast. We're a lot of people out of work right now, right? So here's the deal. How do we be intentionally, we have to be intentional about hiring people that are outside our total normal circle. And even I had a problem. I could not find, it's not as easy to find Black people to bring in into the game, right? It's not easy to bring women into the game. So we have to be super intentional about it. I believe that, like I said, there's one race, it's the human race. I'm only Black because society says I'm Black. And I'm cool with that. I'm totally cool with that, right? I'm really comfortable in my skin. But how do we have to be super intentional, because even as a founder of a company, I had a super diverse company too, by the way. You know, we were 50% women and all that stuff. And we have to be super intentional. So intentionality is the best thing that I can do. So a quick little exercise, and I talk about this all the time. I talk about this in an article. Take your phone, look at the last 10 people that you communicated with, and see what was their background. How diverse are is that last 10 people that you text messaged, right? You can do that. You can do that internally. Look at your Slack. Who are you talking to? Who's in the Slack channel? Look at your email. Look at your Signal. Look at all this stuff. So how much intersectionality do you have in there, right? And I encourage you to reach out and to talk to schools. And I've been volunteering by talking to schools. So is the act of bringing more people and bringing more diversity and inclusion in is to go out. You have to go outside your comfort zone. Like I said, and it's kind of weird because I'd say it would be easy. Once everybody, have made a career, it's super easy to not do that. So it's hard, but we got to put in the work. And there is abundance, though. And some of the things, it's not too political, so I'm gonna say it. Yeah, I'll cut it if y'all want to. There's more than enough jobs out there for anybody, right? In tech and cybersecurity. There's no woman, no Black person, none of that. There's plenty of jobs. There's no need to say such and such, this label is trying to take my job. No, bro, there's plenty of jobs. You just have to be, and I'm gonna quote Jay-Z, right? Jay-Z said, put me anywhere on God's green earth and I'll triple my worth. So if you're equipped with the right skill set, no matter what you are, but we do need to have those opportunities and be intentional about bringing them on, right? Because there's more than enough jobs. And so, you know what I trip out on, though, is the military gave me an ASVAB test, right? That ASVAB test plucked me out the hood, plucked me out of poverty. When I was growing up, didn't have heat, didn't have lights, didn't have none of that. I lived in abandoned buildings, all kind of crazy stuff like that. Like totally broke growing up, right? Totally broke. And that it plucked me out of there, and I'm working for NSA within a matter of months, maybe 6 months from getting boot camp to getting cleared to working to spying on the Russians. It was like a 6 month process. So now this is funny. I'm in here reading intel reports now, right? People like Rick used to write. Intel reports coming across, and I had the highest clearance in the land. I could read anything. So I'm reading about all these troop movements and this and that and all that stuff. So I'm from the hood, bro. I was reading intel. It's kind of funny because intel is always the worst case scenario. There's Russian troops massing at this border. There's this. Intel is always like something to pop off, right? That's why we always going to war.
It's the nature, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm in here reading all these intel reports. And a lot of intel is derived from open resources. People don't understand that either, right? You could be a dang good intelligence analyst without a clearance, right? So So I'm reading all this stuff, and then like, but I'm reading news, CNN, the Rwanda situation, millions of black people dying in Africa. So I call back home to my boy. So I'm having these conversations with my coworkers on intelligence, global stuff. So I call back home and I'm like, hey man, that's messed up what's going on in Rwanda. And my boy's like, who's Rwanda? I don't know her. So I'm like, it's a totally different world, bro. It's the craziest thing. So, but that's the disconnect. So 6 months, I went from hood, wouldn't know where Rwanda was if you paid me to being trained by the military and working on highly classified systems. Bro, I've been working like with Unix since I was 18 years old, right? Like, how do you get other black kids out of the community? How do you give more women that opportunity? The military was my opportunity to do that. And so, and that's what we have to do. And the article goes into some steps that we can do, but that's the background on why I wrote the article. And so, and hopefully Rick gets to share that. It has some plain step measures that you can start implementing now. But I'm a testament of giving people opportunity. If I didn't go to the military, like what the heck would I be doing right now? I have no clue, but I don't believe in anything's an accident though. I believe I went to the military on purpose, and I believe now I'm in tech. Like, bro, like, so there's this thing called a Capital Factory. It's a startup thing. They also have a venture capital fund. They're in Dallas, Houston, and Austin, right? Started off in Austin. I'm on their board of direct. I'm on their advisory board now. So I'm in the room with all these multimillionaires and funds and all this other stuff. So all these people I'm hanging around with are multimillionaires, right? And so now I'm a voice in there now. So we need more voices in the room. Hopefully this makes sense. I'm going in a little bit, forgive me, but hopefully it makes sense. We need to give people opportunities because there's tons of more Marcus Careys out there.
I think like there's some practical things in that article. Like say, we'll send it out, but like recruiting from historical black colleges.
Yep.
Sounds pretty obvious when I read it. I've got friends that have gone to historical black colleges, but it never kind of crossed my mind. I just think the colleges that are super close, but there's, you know, we've got some
Paul in DFW Quinn.
As well. Yeah. I've had colleagues there, and so I think that's a nice one to add into the mix. You know,
let's talk about that.
Yeah.
That's what's funny. Like in Austin, like I'm in a room with all these people, right? And usually I'm one or two black people there, right? But what's crazy is that I would bring up, hey, y'all should talk to Houston Tillotson, because I'm always pointing people over there because that's the oldest college in Austin. It's older than UT. Most of the people I talked to did not know it existed. So I've been lecturing there. I lectured there 2 weeks ago. I lectured their whole business college on how entrepreneurship, starting up, asking me all kind of questions. That's it, man. Like that's local to me. Like I'm right there. And what I'm starting off, this is pretty cool. I'm about to start off what I call the Black Unicorn Party. I believe there's a lot of black unicorns. Like being a black unicorn, I grew up on, we had $300 a month to live on. And that was from government subsistence, right? Like a SSI check or something, because my sister has sickle cell and food stamps. My mom was living with the dude, so we had food stamps cut off. $300 a month, bro. So that's why we got evicted every 2 months. But what's crazy about that is there are people in your city that are broke and don't have no opportunities that you can reach out to now. But I'm sorry interrupting you a little bit there, but yeah, HBCUs, they're probably one near you. Definitely if you live in a metropolitan area, go help out, go pull up, go teach. I've been doing lectures, or LiveQuest actually sponsors a lot of people, and I've been lecturing high schools as well. I've been talking to them about hacking and breaking into networks and blue teams and red teams. So you just have to be proactive. You just can't sit back.
Yeah, I'm on the founding board member for an organization called Security Advisor Alliance. And we go out to a bunch, Charles and Casey have both done it with me, before, where you go out and underprivileged We're not going out to the suburbs up in North Dallas, right, where those school districts have, you know, lots of opportunity. Last one that we did, we had people from, you know, South Dallas and some of the schools there, and trying to get them exposed to tech. And then we had like a whole capture the flag, you know, an age appropriate capture the flag thing for, you know, sophomores and freshmen and that sort of stuff to try to expand that out. So yeah, it's interesting. Some of the stuff in COVID land is a little more challenging because now it's remote, but I think maybe it's easier in some ways as well, because you can scale a little bit better than spending a whole day someplace. There was one other area that was, I don't know, this is also maybe, again, maybe privilege or ignorance on my part, but you talk about compensation in there, and you talk about people, me paraphrasing, like, that may not have, you know, the capital to take a risk at a startup, right? Because, you know, a lot of people that haven't been startup land, they may not understand how equity and stuff like that works, but, you know, you'll often take less salary in a role, and then hopefully you get acquired. And then it made me think about people that didn't have, you know, the financial savings or background like that to be able to go and take a risk at a startup. So you may not see as many people that don't have much opportunity in the tech community. So I thought that was an interesting one as well.
Yeah, certainly. I didn't understand this as well, but what I've done when I did try to recruit Black employees, super talented people working at Microsoft, Facebook, Google, you know, everybody's in Austin, right? So, but many of these people, they're making great money. And what they're doing is they're support. They are the first person out of that circumstance for their family. So they may have many relatives that are still in the hood that they're supporting and all that stuff. They're the first person that got out. So they can't come work for half the pay for me. And some people get, so some of these engineers get paid $200, $300, $400,000. No software, no startup can afford that kind of talent. None. And these are really smart Black people, but they can't risk it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, and that's what people don't understand. Like, that's why, and I recommend, I have a crazy recommendation that people help those people that are working at those Googles and all that stuff. I encourage those companies to do like an 80-20 split and have them advise and help out smaller companies. So that's one of the things I talk about in the story.
Well, we'll definitely put it in the show notes. Is there, as we kind of wrap up, is there anything you want to promote? You know, anything new that's coming out in the next several months? Anything that we can put the word on the street out for you?
Well, I just want everybody to, so they're definitely, you check out the Tribal Hackers books if you want to get in Tribal Hackers. The most important thing that I tell people is, and I talk about this on Twitter all the time, I just want everybody to try to be a blessing to each other. Everybody try to help each other out, because that doesn't happen a lot. So, like I said, it doesn't take much. Like I was in the military, and what's dope about the military and the camaraderie that I have, anybody that's ever been in the military, veterans, we have instant camaraderie most of the time, right? There's a couple of people I heard that are crazy, but most of the time, if you were in the military, instant camaraderie, white, Black, brown, Puerto Rican, or Haitian, right? It doesn't matter. You might've got that bar right there. Like, help each other out. Like, we're all Americans. Why aren't we helping each other out? I mean, so I want people to help each other out. Like, hey, yeah, go check out Tribal Hackers, but be a blessing to your neighbor. You know what I'm saying? You know, help each other out, and everything else is going to take care of itself. You know what I'm saying? So that's my parting shot. Help each other out, be a blessing to each other, help somebody out. And you don't have to go over to Africa or China to help somebody out. You got somebody right in your community, right in your office that you can help out. So help them out. That's it.
Yeah. Absolutely love that message.
Yeah.
Awesome. So I guess that should wrap us up. Thank you again so much for joining us, Marcus. Listeners, if you've been living under a rock, please take a look at Marcus's Twitter at Marcus J. Carey. Thanks, Rick and Charles, for joining us. And y'all take care. Have a good one.
Stay safe.